Are you guys done? We're going national.
All right. Gord's on his best behavior. Nick Kypreos. Gord Stellick in for the vacationing. Justin Bourne in now joining us. Jason Bukala, former head scout, does a terrific job for Sportsnet. Looking forward to the next 25 minutes because we're going to go down some names. We're going to go down all the Canadian cities. Really interesting time of the year. As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. All right, Books. I think I want to open up with what we thought a month ago being one of the bigger prizes out there in Mikko Rantanen, only to find out he's gone. And lo and behold, he's resurfacing right now. Just your thoughts on what has really been played out here, unlike we've, ever seen before. Yeah. A guy in his prime, a superstar in his prime, get traded, only a month later potentially getting traded again.
So in my time, and I haven't been, out of that meeting for too long, it was always deal in the drawer if you're going to make that type of acquisition at this time of the year. When you're going to go out and you're going to sacrifice the assets that they sacrifice and you're going to bring in a potential, let's be honest, he's a top five player in the league when he's going over 100 points, power body, pedigree in the playoffs, the whole nine yards, right? So I'm surprised that we're at where we're at right now. The fit, the timing has been unusual, though. I really think he was caught with his pants down in terms of the trade itself. Like, I think he's rattled. He hasn't spent much time in Raleigh yet. He's only been there for, I think, three home games, maybe, because of the Four Nations.
Yeah, 6-9 have been on the road, I think.
Yeah, like they've been on the road. So there's been it's just been an unusual transition, I would suggest. But having said that, this is a business, and this is a big-ticket item. And I'm surprised that Tom Dundon, that is the owner of Carolina, wouldn't have had more confidence that the deal was in the drawer before the deal actually.
Yeah, and the drawer thing, because it's called tampering, but the ways of getting around tampering. And Jason, look at all the other trades. Anyone who gets traded, like Cooley in New York, the Vancouver, you got a contract mysteriously appears the day later, yeah. Like you're signed for 6 years. I mean, that's, you're trying to lock down that thing before. There really shouldn't be any mystery about what's going on, but Carolina did it twice. Last year they did it with Gensel, and this year what's weird is, you got the impression they felt there was something in the drawer because they weren't going to let Gensel happen again, and now there's signs that maybe it could.
That's exactly my take on it, and I'll give you a secondary take. So when the big Florida trade with Calgary went down a few years ago and Huberto goes to Calgary, and all of a sudden he doesn't have Alexander Barkov in the middle feeding him in the pill and doing the things that he can do. Huberto likes to dish it, but they had a synergy, those two together, right? Now you've got Rantanen going to Carolina. I believe, and I think we would all agree, that they feel like Aho is going to be a good fit to finish national team members, known each other forever. So far, it hasn't quite worked out that well. It could still go off, let's be honest. But I think that it's always interesting to me, like how much better than McKinnon in the short window here, how much better does McKinnon make people around him? You know, like if you look what's going on with Nakish there now, in Colorado, it's pretty good. And he's playing a lot of minutes inside McKinnon. So there's going to be a transition time here, but here's the thing. I'm just shocked that we're at the stage where, what is it, at least there's been an offer on the table. That's how I understand it. You know better, Kipper, but it's got to be north of 13 sheets probably, right? It's a lot of dough around there anyways. Okay, so 12 plus, whatever it is, it's a lot of money. There used to be a time where guys were running to the table to sign those types of contracts.
On flat caps.
True. Yeah, that's interesting in itself. You know, if you go 8 years and you go, you know, whatever it's going to end up being.
So I know you mentioned that he may have been caught with his pants down in terms of the trade and maybe just having this shell shock feeling starting out in Carolina, but he has not played well.
No, he hasn't.
So if they do put him up to market, would that scare a few teams off that he's not playing well? Or is that just a given that he is the player we saw in Colorado and not the one in the last 3 or 4 weeks in Carolina?
Yeah, I think that the risk reward still outweighs the risk. So if I'm on the cusp of a Stanley Cup contending outfit, I'm still taking on that risk. And let's not forget that. So he's at, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's at 4-2-5 right now in Carolina. And depending on how the money gets punted down the road again, you know, this could look interesting for the team that's acquiring him.
So let me just pick up on that and I'll let you go, Gord. In terms of, excuse me, his unique situation, and give Dundon credit because he got Chicago to pick up 50%. And now either Carolina is in a position to pick up 50% or pass it on to a third party to bring his AAV down to $2.4 million,
that's right,
meaning that the cap space that needs to be left to trade for him could be as little as $200,000 or $300,000. As a scouting staff, is that a nugget in itself to try to convince any general manager, go get this guy? It's like fitting him in for free.
Yeah, no, it's a huge piece of the puzzle. If you backtrack to if you think you're going to be real good in the offseason and he's going into his UFA year and he's floated out there in August. Let's get crazy for a sec. They float him to you in August. And if you could have said to a staff at that time, we can take him on for south of $3 million, you guys would have been jumping through hula hoops to do that, obviously, right? So, yeah, that's absolutely part of it. And you start looking across the landscape of the league, guy, there's almost every team that's a contender. They have to massage it a little bit, a few teams, but they can fit that easily. So that's where I go back to the risk and the reward here. There's a few things I want to just take off what you said there, Kipper. The Chicago retention there, this is where you got to be careful when you're retaining money, because the Chicago Blackhawks now are looking to move out possibly Donato, right? Seth Jones. So they have one retention slot left. So now it compresses the marketplace with the less amount of retention slots that you have left on certain items. They've ate money on Rantanen. Now they eat up a slot. Now if they go out and they want to trade Jones and they're going to have to eat money on Jones, that means that whoever's making another deal with the Chicago Blackhawks somewhere else in that lineup, they got to take on full salary.
Yeah, or the Hawks will have to take a dog contract anyway, because Rantanen will be done, I guess, after this year. Probably the other way if they can't retain it. Kippy mentioned about the Canadian-based team. So the term gunslinger, when there wasn't the cap era, you know, there were a lot of gunslingers, right? Yeah. They just, whatever. And, you know, Jimmy Rutherford, I know he's not GM, but Patrick Alvin, it seems that that's a credo there in Vancouver. Calgary made a real hockey trade. Like, I mean, that wasn't a trade deadline deal. Stan Bowman's in his first year in Edmonton, and they got one more hurdle. They got things that aren't going right. Winnipeg, you know, sometimes they've been quiet. Kevin Cheveldayoff went big another year. Ottawa, man, oh, man, if you got one player that can make a difference, you know, you better be looking at it. And then, you know, Brad Treliving did all that gunslinging in Calgary. So I'm curious about that mentality, even in a cap era, particularly to keep the theme. It really seems like a Wild West trade deadline period this time.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a gunslinger out there lurking in the weeds, it's probably Bill Zito in Florida. He's going to, depending on what happens here with how long Tkachuk's going to be out, I don't think he's going to be out that long, but he's going to definitely try and get creative here. He might do nothing, but he's going to try for sure to do something that's going to be outside the box, I would suggest. I'd like Chevy to step up and be that guy this time around for a variety of reasons. A, they're a heck of a hockey team. So I think that there are one or two pieces away. If you look at the Winnipeg Jets statistically across the board, goaltending, power play, goals for, all these, you know, these long range analysis now, they're great. You know, top of the table. Penalty kill is only 79%. And they don't start with the puck enough in the defensive zone. And we all know that when you live on the margins in playoffs, you get into a overtime faceoff, a key penalty kill, 10 minutes left in the third period, these types of things. These secondary players that don't look like much that you pick up at the deadline, they end up being super valuable. So I'm going to float a name to you guys, and I'm not in the rumor business, but I was doing some things on here. Pageau in New York. Okay, I don't know what the Islanders are going to do necessarily, but he's $5 million. He's got cost certainty for next year. I don't love the player offensively. I think he hit a home run years ago that we thought he could be something that he's not, but he's a secondary guy, right? He's almost 60% in the faceoff dot, guys. I'm talking 700 draws, and he kills penalties. He averages almost 2 minutes a night killing penalties. So I float a guy like that out there because if you can go out and get him, he's got cost certainty for next year term. He's going to score you 40, 45 points. It's $5 million, but the cap's going where it is. There's a fit right there. And then you go and you think of a guy like an Oleksiak on the back end from Seattle, something like that. Because the Jets, they complain out to have as much as $12 million to spend next week. So it's going to take assets to get it done. They don't want to trade their first rounders, Gordy. You know that. Mm-hmm. They're a draft and development outfit. But with where the business model of the game's going, I believe it's time to strike there in Winnipeg.
I wrote an article today for the Toronto Star, and it revolved around Rantanen and the possibility of the Leafs bringing him in as almost an insurance policy if, in fact, Marner leaves in the offseason and Rantanen would have had a sufficient amount of time to see how much he loves Toronto, and maybe he slides right into that scenario. Florida can do the same thing with Rantanen in terms of bringing him on board. And if you lose Sam Bennett, then you've got money to go to get Rantanen. How important is it for a hockey club not only to get a guy, but to keep him from going to another team here? Like, it would be counterproductive not only not to get Rantanen if you're the Leafs, but to watch him go to Florida. Do you guys have those type of conversations?
100% you do, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you'll take it a step further, and you'll get news of a deal. I'm sure you might have went through it back in the day, too. You'll get news of a deal. Okay, it's happening. This is happening. Which might make you pull off another deal, because that deal right there, from the outside, you've done all your homework. You've looked at rosters. You've looked at, you know, how you're going to potentially match up against the top teams in your conference to start. And you say to yourself, we can do this now because that doesn't make them any better. Or them retaining that doesn't improve their locker room. A variety of things, all the intel that you've collected through the course of the season. So, yeah, that's a fascinating thing, because people will throw rocks at a glass house when a transaction doesn't get made. But trust me when I tell you, it's calculating as well, where some teams will sit there and not make that transaction with that team because they know they're letting them off the mat, and that might actually make them better if I got to face them. It absolutely happens.
Wow.
Tell you another one is, Bruce Boudreau, George McPhee, they'll talk about a 2010. They had a really good Washington Capitals team, and they went quantity, and that was Joe Corvo, Walker, and everyone was pissed because they moved down. But you get quality. And, you know, and so one thing, so I'll use Detroit, Columbus, Ottawa. All three of those teams have been out of the playoffs far too long.
Sure.
One of them will definitely get in, maybe two, and they're all vying for a spot right now. So you optically, first of all, you want it to help, but also optically, for the owner quite often, or just in general, the fan base, but also in the dressing room. Like, you make that, you get a quality player, and then dressing room, they go, you know what? They're working in the front office.
Yeah.
They're working in the front office. And I'm wondering those three teams about, hey, and one player can make a difference. Right? You don't want to leave any stone unturned. So about the Ville Husso clearing some salaries, kind of interesting in Detroit. So I'm curious, Detroit, Ottawa, Columbus, which by the way is COD, if you use the three, that's easy to remember. Anyway, how would you look at those three as far as being active?
Ottawa's going to have a real hard time. Cap space is limited. Asset management is going to be problematic. They don't have a ton of assets that I believe are as attractive to some other teams. Columbus, I got to be honest, I on the panel about a month ago, I said Columbus might sneak in, you know, and it was almost, it was a bleeding heart a little bit too, because I thought they were playing well, and I want a good thing to happen to this franchise. They deserve it, right? Everybody there deserves that. But in terms of the big picture there, I would say that Columbus and Detroit are going to come right down to the wire. I think Steve Yzerman, especially with the job Todd McLellan has done there, honestly, if they make playoffs and where they were and where they're going, he won't win Coach of the Year, but it's a name that people will float around saying, what a great job. So both those teams there, they have assets to give, and they have draft capital to give as well. So Ottawa's in tough, guys. They're in tough. The injury bug, too. So, you know, to your example you just spoke of there, Kipper, if you look at what they have to deal with injury-wise up the middle of the ice there, if I'm anybody else in the team, I want to eliminate playoff-contending teams. I'm not feeding them a bone, you know, deal with it internally. Like, they were badly outmanned last night against the Jets.
As far as the Boston Bruins, they're still looking like they're in the thick of things, but they're really not terms of what they can do here. Are we just going to see them kind of quietly go into this? I know Brad Marchand's out there. I reported on sportsnet.ca that I thought it was highly unlikely they'll move him, even if he doesn't get his contract extension, and you hope that, you know, they can work something out down the road, but it doesn't appear like we're going to see a lot of activity here out of the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, that's a tough one. When you talk about owners, I'm sure you're familiar with Jeremy Jacobs in Boston. Let's just say that he definitely likes to cash checks, okay? So the Boston Bruins, in the cycle that they appear to be entering into right here, it's not great for their trajectory, let's just say. And I don't see them getting in. There's a lot. Like, if you look at their plus, minus, and goals for, goals against, for, like, you could go through a whole bunch of different things there. Trent Frederick just went down with injury. There was I don't know the severity of that, but that was a guy that I was thinking that they could get some value.
I don't think he'll play before the trade deadline.
So that's going to be a problem. That's a problem. So somebody's going to want to get the medical on him to see where that's going, because I think he's a piece that has value coming back. So big picture there, though, I think that they're just going to be that team that's, you know, wavering in the middle of that wild card for the next couple of years and see where the prospects playing out. But we'll see.
Well, we wonder about Rantanen, but it looks like now it's not if. I mean, Seth Jones, man, he's got to go somewhere. And I'm curious, the blue chipness, how he's valued around the league. And you threw another one out. St. Louis open for business. Like Colton Parayko, that's a blue chip.
That is.
So I'm curious your feel on both.
Peak
those
value,
two.
Too.
Yeah.
Peak value.
Yeah.
So from my perspective in the chair, you asked me in our situation room, Gord, what would you rather do, Jones or Parayko? Different age categories, not far off, but different age categories. Parayko from next year on has $28.75 million left on his contract in real money, okay? $28.75. Jones, even if they absorb half, let's assume they're going to have to absorb something, so let's call it half, and you plane that out over whatever that's up, the money almost equals out to be very, very similar. So how do you manage the assets? I think Parayko is definitely going to cost more than Jones. I like Parayko way more than Jones, period. And I have a bias, so I have to be clear with you guys that I have never been able to shake off my backside, and that is that in the Barkov draft in New Jersey going way back, that draft was Jones was supposed to go first overall, supposedly, and then it was McKinnon, Barkov, Duran, and then Jones.
Duran, yeah.
Okay, and we brought them all in for interview, and right then and there when we were, because it's a big pick, we were second overall, the way that Jones interviewed at that time for us, it stuck with me, and I haven't been able to shake it. I just want to throw it out there. So I'm not so sure that if I'm a Stanley Cup contending team that that's where I'm going, is what I'm trying to tell you. I haven't been able to shake that bias. Parayko, on the other hand, take a look at the statistics. It's unbelievable. Top five in minutes played in the league. Top five, I believe, in – he is the leading even-strength goal scorer of all defensemen in the National Hockey League. In the top 35 scorers in the National Hockey League – he leads. He's the only guy in the top 35 who doesn't play primary power play. Like, I grossly underrated just how good this guy is, and he is going to cost a ton.
Okay, give me something here. A top six forward, a top four defense, a young top.
If you're the Winnipeg Jets, I'll give you this, okay? Because they can fit him cap-wise, no problem, yeah. And they can take on the term. It would cost you Cole Perfetti, your first rounder this year, which I would be willing to give, no problem, because that could be this 32nd pick. This draft's just okay, guys, okay? So the back after the first round, I'm probably giving that up for sure. They're going to ask for next year. St. Louis doesn't have much draft capital this year. They only have four picks, period. So when they're going through this is curious. Do they want to load up this year or punt it to next year? So it's going to be Perfetti, a first rounder, and then it's going to be a fifth, because you're going to be taking on all the salary. They're not going to absorb any on the other end. And they're going to ask for more than that. That's how much competition is going to be there. There's a Reshevsky kid. I keep throwing out his name. Mark Hillier is going to kill me with the Jets, but he's a diamond in the rough playing in Moscow Dynamo. Fifth-round pick by the Jets a few years ago.
One more kind of chip prospect, right?
He's a top six NHL forward if he comes over, okay?
Wow.
So there's some risk-reward there. So that's the type of bulk that it's going to take for a deal like that.
Are some teams like the Oilers, the Leafs, like they're not asset driven right now, right? Will the Oilers have a tough time?
Oilers are going to have
finding
a tough time.
A Colton Parayko.
They're gonna have to shop more in the Mario Ferraro, David Savard, maybe Alexiak Waters, those types of Waters. They've only got one grade A prospect in their system, and that's Savoy. They picked him up from Buff, which is curious. But they haven't drafted. They have just like over the last. Between 2021 and now, I believe they've only had like four or five picks in the top three rounds, the Oilers. So it just planes out to be not very deep, right? It's a lot of averages. They're in tough that way, and then they got to, depending on what goes on with Kane, they got to massage their cap situation as well.
So I was talking to Thomas Harley, I guess this morning, 18th overall pick. Dallas has done a great job keeping picks, drafting really well late in the first round. You know, Maverick Bourque's another one, Wyatt Johnston, on and on and on, right? So, and it's funny, I was kidding, not kidding earlier, but talking about a big trade I made, Ken Reggett for two first-round picks from Philadelphia.
I love Kenny Reggett back in the day.
But I also realized later on, Bobby Clark knew it wasn't a very good draft. We weren't really up on it. It wasn't a really good draft. So the point is, at this year, if you're in the playoffs, is it the hell with it? It's the kind of draft that the first-round pick, you know, it's not that kind of draft. It's not a deep draft, so... It's for sale, or is there a certain number? Like, is it 12th? Is it 15th, 18th, 20th that you really want to hang on to that pick?
Yeah, my line in the sand right now is probably around 18, and then it really starts to be gray after that. You know, you're kind of throwing darts. There's a lot of similarities between 19 and, honestly, Gord, like 55. Like it, right. it goes there's that much of a range.
People don't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you start again, I always talk about the margins, but that's also for me when I'm running our staff or amateur staff, I'm saying like we're splitting hairs on a guy at 19. We just spent an hour talking about him and we're going to talk about the same guy at 55. So now I'm going up to Dale Talon, my manager at that time, saying, listen, we're splitting hairs from 19 to 55. Have at it, because that's where the value's at and we're going to be fine. So let's get aggressive. That's my recommendation anyways.
As far as the Vancouver Canucks go, was Miller like Jimmy's big one? Is there anything left outside of Brock Besser's decision to be made in Vancouver?
I wish I could sit here and tell you for sure. That has been such a teeter-totter from the get-go this year. It's amazing to me. If you really, on the positive side, the amount of injuries and internal strife that they were dealing with from puck drop, basically, this year, right? Demko's been out. Hironic missed a lot of time. Hughes, obviously. All these things, they're still in it. They're still in it. So there's enough there. There's still enough talent. So do you own Rental Besser? I don't know. I guess that's that goes up the chain, too, to your owner, because we're right on the cusp of playoffs. You want to own Rental him. I don't see a path to Brock Besser returning in a Vancouver Canucks uniform. I think the Minnesota Wild, for example, will pay him more than what the Vancouver Canucks are willing to pay him on a longer-term deal. And he's a I don't want to just call him a one-trick pony, but he kind of is, isn't he, guys? Like, he's a hash marks down, center of the ice guy, slap tip on the power play, that kind of stuff.
Which you need.
You do need that, but you also need it in the right. Now the cap's going up, so here's my contradiction. The cap's going up. If you can live with his pace and you believe that what you got coming later on, the Lekaramakis, all these other guys, are going to be able to, or Patterson's going to be better and is going to be able to complement each other more, I guess you go down that road. But he's not getting any faster, and he's not old.
So, you know, Washington did such a great job retooling quickly.
Oh, did they ever.
And it kind of dwarfs, say, the Calgary Flames. Like, last year, they all of a sudden became sellers. They had a change in the middle, so it was kind of the year was in flux. They had to sell a lot, including Markstrom. And they bounced back like they did this year. And Huberto's found his way. And they make a real trade with Philadelphia for some pieces, right? Yep. You know, and, you know, getting a Frost and Farabee and that. So I'm curious that you've done a lot of stuff in Calgary. And I could see you're saying, okay, you know what? We got to stay the course. Then you're saying, man, we're so close.
Yeah.
We're so close to getting in the playoffs that do we go one? Do we try one? To, if Vancouver's looking, do we try to make a bit of a splash as well to overtake the Canucks?
Yeah. So if they do go down that road, because, again, they've got draft capital, tons of draft capital this year, unfortunately, but it's there. Okay. So there's going to be some buyer that's going to want something. And they've got some really strong assets coming up through the system, like Henry Muse. Has had a great year in the Ontario League. Zane Parekh's going to be close to NHL ready. So they've got these types of guys. I would be of the appetite, if you're going to do it again, sort of like in the Philly mold, if you can. So the Mario Ferraro type situation where he's a lefty, if you look at Rasmus Anderson and Uyghur on the right side, those guys are logging, or Weeks plays both sides, but they're logging 24 minutes a night, and they do what they do, shot block, heavy lifting. It would be nice to get another guy like that. You know, they're kind of patchworking it a little bit there with Solovyov and some other guys. So that's where I would go, because Ferraro is 26. He's at 3.25. He's got another year. You can see where that trajectory is going. That would be my appetite there.
Do you think the Washington Capitals have kind of messed this whole thing up moving forward? Because if I'm any owner, particularly Boston, St. Louis, Nashville, Rangers, if they miss out, it's like, I don't want the 3 to 5 year program to turn. I want the Washington Capital one.
Well, the Vegas program.
Right? And, like, not everybody's going to get that lucky, are they?
No.
In the next 18 months?
No. And, you know, it even goes back before that, like when they brought Strome in, even. Like some of these pickups that they've made, real savvy pickups. The one thing I would say to this, guys, is that I believe, you brought up Dallas, okay? If you look at Jimmy Neal, Joe McDaniel's their director of scouting. So when they were all winning cups in Detroit, Gordy, they were all there together, like, Joe McDaniel, most of his staff, his scouting staff, came to Dallas with Jimmy Neal.
Right.
So they've been together forever and doing things. It's the same in Washington, Kipper. Like, it's the same. They have, they get into a room. They all think the same. There's nobody that's outside the box. There's no fly in the ointment. So they have a plan. They stick to a plan, and they tow the rope in a certain direction. So I think it's really important, because when you get into draft situations, free agency, when you're spending too much money, trade deadline, when you get in there, you're not going to waste any time with fluff. You know exactly how you guys want to build your team, and this is what happens. Yes, there's some luck involved, but there's also a blueprint of how they like to do their homework, and so they're going to take more swings that end up being home runs.
Yeah, you know something like we talk about the Penguins sticking with players. That might have been the Capitals if Backstrom, Oshie, and Kuznetsov circumstances didn't come that, okay, you don't have a sentimental
right
to keep them. Like, all of a sudden, maybe in a way they did kind of a favor. You wouldn't think that way, but maybe at the right time, it was time for a change, and there was no choice because of the health situation.
So Sid's screwed, man. He's never going to play a meaningful game again with
the Olympics next
Pittsburgh
year.
Penguins.
The Olympics.
It's going to be a long time coming in Pitt. They're not going to be – now the pressure's on. Kyle Dubas, Wes Clark, he worked for me in Florida. He was here in Toronto. Pressure's on. You're going to have to get really
good. He did have a window, but he also kind of got handcuffed a little bit with Malkin and Letang.
They don't have any kids.
For sure. They have no kids. They don't have enough prospects.
Well, like San Jose has prospects. Like, yeah, they're whatever. But yeah. Pittsburgh, when they said, oh, we're going to go.
They don't have anybody. They don't have enough kids on their roster.
Yeah.
And they don't have enough kids coming. Like, it's going to be bad for a while. I'm talking like, so he's in what, going into year three next year, Kyle there? He's got a 7-year deal. It won't get good until year seven, and then he'll be on the clock to, it better be getting really good at that time. I'm curious because that whole thing with the ownership, whatever's going on there now, trying to sell 49 points, I think, of the team, if I'm not mistaken, I'm curious to see how that whole thing, because when Pitt isn't good, guys, remember back in the day, when they don't get good, people don't come to games in Pittsburgh.
Jason, when I, my time with
remember the igloo?
Yeah, 3,000 fans. I had a friend in the seats. I went down and joined them because that was the year they ended up drafting Mario. So that was the lowest crowd I ever saw in my time. And there were some low crowds around the league. So,
curious time. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
There's no question all these scenarios and these conversations must have happened before Sid Crosby agreed to an extension this past summer. But I'm just wondering if maybe it gets revisited in the offseason.
You know what? I watch him and McKinnon. I'll be a fan for a sec. I watch him and McKinnon, you know, the brotherhood. It was great, right? It was great. And you can tell they have a shine on for each other. And then as soon as I'm watching that, it brought me back to like when Ray Bourque got traded from the Bruins to the Avs back in the day. Like Patrick Waugh, obviously that was a different type of thing, but I don't know. And in my dream scenario, I kind of see where, because if he goes and knocks on Kyle's door and says, you know, I'd like one more last run at this, as if they're going to ever hold him back for that.
Yeah,
they'll do whatever
you
want to.
Yeah.
But Kippy, I was saying yesterday, because they get annoyed in Pittsburgh, and hey, he's got the right to decide. I totally get it. Let's be selfish. I want to see him play deep in the playoffs. I want to see Ovi play. I want the best players going deep in the playoffs. And you saw that with the Four Nations faceoff. Sydney's still one of the best players. So that's what I'm saying. I totally get. And I don't get why he's doing it, but that's fine. I respect it. But I want to see the best players go deep year in, year out.
I'm 100%. It's kind of like, to me, in baseball terms, when Tony Gwynn was with the San Diego Padres forever. And you're like, just put a Yankee uniform on. Or even when the Jays were great back then, you know, put that uniform on it and win a World Series.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
Sid's won it already. I don't want to overhype this. But that's just kind of, you know, as you go out the door type thing.
Books, great stuff, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Great to be with you.
What do you got tonight?
I'm going across the way, a little Hockey Central, late night games.
All right.
So, you know how that works.
We sure appreciate your time. And,
so, Kippy, the nice suit. I thought he was getting audited today. But anyway, so you're actually.
You know what? I don't know if you were wearing your Whisper 2000 today or what, Gordy, but I was getting hounded with my business today from the, those types of people. So,
okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Well, have a good show.
Gordy, the ultimate bean counter. Books, thanks again, pal. Enjoy the rest of your night, and we'll be back here with Sammy McKee after the break.
Hey, it's Blake Murphy.
And I'm Matt Bonner.
Join us weekday mornings at 11 as we break down all things Toronto Raptors.
It's the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Gord Stellick, Sammy McKee. As a reminder, this hour of Real Kippers brought to you by Bet365. So, Gordo, I know we're going to get into a few news and notes, but all right, you do game time, and then I want to get into Gordo.
Am I talking?
You're good.
There we go. It's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Lots of action tonight on a Thursday night in the NHL. Big one in Florida with the rematch of the Stanley Cup Finals. Florida hosting the Edmonton Oilers. The Edmonton Oilers obviously have lost four in a row now, looking to avoid losing five in a row. They are underdogs against the Panthers, +120. I got some a McDavid clip for you after game time, some McDavid stuff for you. I would imagine that he gets off the schneid tonight. I would even go as far as to say maybe a 2 or 3 point game for him. Give me Connor McDavid to get 3 points tonight in a Stanley Cup final rematch at +450. Looking at some other action on the ice, the Winnipeg Jets in Nashville to take on the Nashville Predators, looking to extend their winning streak to 12 games, fellas. They are -135 favorites, as you would imagine, against the Nashville Predators. The Jets are having an unbelievable season. The Vancouver Canucks in Anaheim to take on the Ducks in the second half of back-to-back after a big win against the Kings last night. The Canucks are -125 on the money line. The Anaheim Ducks are +105. And that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app, play the stars, and find out why it's never ordinary. Bet365 must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, I'll get back to you, but let's follow it up with Connor McDavid, because he was asked about his emotional state in terms of coming off such a huge tournament, as we know, last Thursday, to the daily grind, right back at it. Do you have that sound, Sammy?
We got the clip here, yeah.
I'd be lying if I said, I'd been feeling good out there. It's been tough to get going, which is obviously not an excuse. I got to find a way to get going here. So, obviously, a big emotional week, exciting week last week, and back to reality pretty quick.
Newsflash, Gord, he's human.
What about people saying he hasn't been the same NHL-wise since the suspension and before the suspension, when it was argued he should have had a suspension? You know, I don't know. I can't remember those games because I think of the Four Nations faceoff and how he played phenomenal. But he's human. You don't hear that very often. Edmonton's not just losing; they're losing.
They're getting smoked a lot, and
the coach called the, accurately. They don't mind the term, but fragile. Like, it's weird. You're one game away from winning a Stanley Cup, and you're hitting not just a bit of a lull, but kind of a fragile state of the season.
Can I read these stats to you from our friend Jason Gregor in Edmonton? Never seen before stats from McDavid. 8 games without a point, 5-on-5. 6 games without being on the ice for a goal at 5-on-5. Outscored 10-0 at 5-on-5 over the last 6 games. And he said he needs to get going. Rarely you hear him say that. Expect some jump from 97 tonight. Those are eye-popping numbers for McDavid. Eye-popping numbers.
And I know over the last little while on our Leaf Hour edition of our show, Austin Matthews hasn't shot a goal in against a goalie now in like 9 or 10 games. Mm-hmm. We're just not used to seeing our stars in the game go on a human pace.
Yeah, the opposite of a heater. We have to ask Jack Hughes. Yeah, Jack Hughes. What's the a cooler? I don't know. There's a heater and a cooler.
But 10 years now he's been in the league. Right, a good 10 years. I don't know. Is it possible that there's just a bit of a wall?
We're talking about McDavid?
Yeah, sure. I'll even give Connor that, right? Is there, can they just, are they okay to hit a bit of a wall, hopefully temporarily?
Well, I mean, geez, compare it to Sidney Crosby and Ovechkin. I'm trying to think. I don't know what, remember Ovi in the playoffs against Montreal when they got, and they said, oh, they figured him out. He's only got one move, right? So I don't know whatever it may be. So I don't know if you call it a wall or whatever it may be. And, hey, the team component comes into play as well. Like, when you're – and does that mean, unfortunately, there's not that kind of depth? Because when they play ordinary, the
team
plays really ordinary. That's not a good sign.
I think it does. And I think it just I think it just points in the direction that if he's not doing McDavid-like things, they're going to have a very hard time winning. Him and Leon have been carrying the team for so long that maybe it's just catching up a little bit.
Well, and they made the great pickup with Zach Hyman. That was a great. But then they're thinking, okay, Arvidsson, Skinner, haven't really happened yet. You know, just other complementary pieces that they've tried to get around them. So, I don't know, we shall see.
Do you think, you know, we talked about it, I think, maybe at the start of this week, but coming back from, you know, the training camp, the start of the year, where you come back, like, they had a slow start to the year where, you know, it's hard to get up for these games because the last meaningful games you played in was the game 5, 6, and 7 of the Stanley Cup final. You come into the start of the year, it's a little bit slow. After coming off that week, which he talked about there, where it's the highest of highs, it doesn't get any more intense than those games were played, the Canada and U.S. games. Like, I think it is natural for him to have a little bit of a lull, but the thing would be that it started before that. I don't know what the total argument is for that, looking ahead to it, looking back to it, but those were some pretty... pretty impactful, intense games to put right in the middle of a mundane sort of dog days of the season.
Is there something, Gord, that Stan Bowman can do between now and the trade deadline to rejuvenate this guy, to give him some emotional kind of jolt with somebody coming in?
Well, it's funny because Corey Perry was that kind of guy, right? You know what I mean? That Connor McDavid wanted, and they got him, and he paid a little bit more than Corey Perry was getting, right? Yeah, I'm not saying it's not a Corey Perry type, but I don't know what, you know, you brought in, you know, Connor Brown's been there for a while. He was a teammate in junior. I think they really tried in the summer that little bit of tweaking, and they still were one win away from winning a Stanley Cup. So I'm always trying to get back perspective, but then also it's a new year, and quite often a year later, that could be a bigger in the rearview mirror than you think, right? What are you thinking? What kind of name could do it?
Yeah.
Like what?
Binnington.
They're not going to bring a goalie. I don't think they're going to bring a goalie.
I know they probably won't, but they probably should seriously consider it. I think he's the one guy that can come in with that confidence, that strut, that call whatever you want, but we all saw it. And, yeah, it hasn't been that pretty the last few years for him in St. Louis, but... It's a good arrogance that I think he could bring in that room right about now unfortunately Skinner can never get to until he wins the game 7 of the final game.
And it's funny because when I think of goaltending trade deadline moves, there's been so few of them, but when the Oilers made it to the final another time, it was Dwayne Roloson. Now we got hurt late in the playoffs, but that was a quiet trade, I think, for a first round pick. And he was a difference maker. And, you know, that's when they had Pronger and all those, you know. So to your point about that, because that's the one other area. They seem to have brought in D, you know, depth in that. And, again, I go back. I'm going to give them a lot of equity and cachet that they made Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. But as long as goaltending continues, like the Chicago Blackhawks got answered that year, right? They thought the goaltending wasn't going to be good enough, and they won 3 Stanley Cups with 2 different goaltenders. But if that question keeps being... you know, niggling kind of question. And, you know, it's not, I give Tom Fitzgerald credit last year in New Jersey. Like, you know, I didn't give my ex-coach, good enough goaltending. And what else? Colorado. Holy mackerel, Mackenzie Blackwood. So I don't know, is there someone that's a lesser price than Binnington that can do what Mackenzie Blackwood's done for the Colorado Avalanche?
You wrote in your piece today, I think maybe in the Kipper's Corner part or whatever part of that, about Marchand and how you don't think he's going anywhere. But that's another guy there. Walks in there and changes the thing.
And it's a weird thing or a weird dynamic right now with Evander Kane on where is he?
Yeah.
When, is he skating, not skating? Can he get in games before, after the trade deadline? But it just, is that not the feel of adding a player at the deadline if he was to come back in, or where is he?
Well, Yanni Gord's another one. Guys aren't healthy, right? You went through it in Toronto about Nick Foligno. Like, you don't have a lot of time to get fully healthy. And, you know, it's a big enough – we're seeing Mikko Rantanen just under, you know, trying to get adjusted, a healthy player, an elite player. And, it isn't that easy. I got to ask you a question because we're talking about writing. Like, you're like J.D. Salinger right now. Like, do you go home do you go home and do you have, like, a sweater with, like, leather things, and do you have an ascot, and do you have a pipe? And, you know, just say, Anne-Marie, I don't want to be bothered. I'll have a little liqueur or something.
Would you
like,
say the kipper in the rye?
The kipper in the rye. Very good. I like this new phase. You know, we always got to grow. And you've been writing for a while, sportsnet.ca and the Star. But now you're Damian Cox is golfing all the time. And you're churning out columns every day, man. Like, I'm saying that with admiration. So I didn't know if that's a whole lifestyle change.
I'm growing, but just in the wrong places, I can assure you.
I went and looked at how many, Vander Kane played the whole playoffs. Like, I was surprised. He played 20 games for them last year, yes, in the playoffs. I didn't remember it being that much.
I don't know what's going on there, but something doesn't feel right there.
Yeah.
I mean, he adds a legit power forward, physicality,
yeah,
guy who can shoot it.
Perfect guy you want to
doesn't
add.
Doesn't sound like anybody's excited to get him back or anything, you know?
No.
It has been not talked about at all.
No.
Yeah. No one brings it up. So.
Not at all. A lot of heat on Bouchard when he's not creating offense. And I think it's tied into the goaltending. It's like, how do we really know for sure if Skinner is the guy still with the lack of support that he's getting up front? So with the tendency to be adding another blue liner than going out there and changing goaltenders?
I think it was Brian Lawton, not Steve Valiquette, who brought up stats statistically. Evan Bouchard is playing a lot better than people think. It's just that he has kind of those moments. Right?
He's got Jake Gardner-itis, where it's like the one big mistake that's what everyone sees, but you don't see a lot of the other stuff that he does.
Yeah. So that was interesting because and then you got Darnell Nurse. You keep looking at it and you go, okay, the unfairness of a number defining you, and the number's too big, right? On his kind of like Tavares was going through for a while in Toronto about the number. The guy's playing well, but the number is at a certain level. So you kind of look at the D there, and then Nurse has a big game, and anyway, whatever. So it just seems to be a mixed bag of their Matthias Ekholm. That was a great acquisition. You know, I don't like they made it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. Okay, like there are only two of 32 teams played in the Stanley Cup Final. So you have to keep an element of perspective about that in Edmonton.
They are saying Nurse is out day to day with undisclosed injury, so he will not be in the lineup against Florida tonight.
Load management.
No injury.
Okay. Allmark, Ottawa. Quick conversation there.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not where the Ottawa Senators wanted to find themselves here.
They thought that they could get Pinto back in the lineup, and Tkachuk, and Norris. That didn't happen. We'll see what happens on the weekend here, but yeah, they're riddled as well.
Well, and, you know, Allmark hurt again, right? But even before that, it's interesting about, as you know, Kippy, you'll look at someone's season, and I find goaltenders in particular, and they'll go, you know, like remember Trevor Kidd never bounced back from that shoulder injury, right? Like he was one of the better goaltenders in the league at the time. I think it was in a skills competition he hurt his shoulder, you know, and you look at, they were going great, they got hurt, and they didn't replicate it. Players in general, but also goaltenders. And that's why Anthony Stoller is coming back the way he has so quickly in Toronto really impresses me. Thatcher Demko struggled for a couple games. Now he's hurt again. And Linus Allmark couldn't pick up initially where he was. He was the hottest goalie in the NHL when he got hurt, you know, before, and then couldn't pick up and now hurt again. And so there's kind of similarities with the Vancouver situation, although right now, you know, Kevin Lankinen seems to be the best next plan B on those two teams.
He saved them.
But you go, I was just looking at Alex Adams' piece from last night about the Jets and Ottawa game. And he has a little stat in here from Natural Stat Trick that the first 13 games of the season, Allmark was an .881 with a .310, minus 1.47 goals saved above expected. And then that stretch that you were talking about, from November 27th to December 22nd, he had a 1.48 goals against average and a .952. He
on fire.
And you look at where they were in the standings.
And totally, everybody's like,
it was happening.
I get 8.25 for him now. I get it. And then, he was that good, that stretch. And then he disappeared.
Yeah.
Disappeared. And then he comes back. And in his last four now, he's an .891 save percentage with a .435 goals against. And he's, you know, a minus .86 goals that saved above expected. But it's really up and down, up and down. That's the last thing you can have from your goalie. Like, we talked about this from the start of the year with him about handling the starters' workload, and Valley was always joking about the doctor season off. Like, there's these questions with him, and it's just, it's kind of unfurling in the worst possible way for the Sens.
Just, again, hate to see the Ottawa Senators miss the playoffs by a point or two and go back and go.
Really
happy that Brady and Matthew got to cherish this family country thing, but
cost us.
But missed the playoffs again.
But again, Johnny Goodrow, the tragedy, coming back, you know, finally coming back, Boone Jenner, Sean Monahan. Like, how about Marchenko's back now? The guy takes a puck to the face and all this stuff. And here's the Columbus Blue Jackets that passed Ottawa. So I'm just saying about teams that aren't good, injuries crush you. Big injuries crush you. The good teams, that's why Paul Maurice can relax about Matthew Tkachuk, who it appears it isn't super serious. I don't know, but he can relax.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be in the playoffs.
Look what the Leafs did this year when they missed their half their bottom six. Half their guys were out, and they still found a way to win.
Well, in the forwards, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like, Columbus is surprisingly finding a way. With those are significant injuries, right? And Columbus is finding a way. And
sure. When we came out of break, I said I wanted to get something into something with you, and then I forgot we had game time. Yesterday, I think it was yesterday, last night, or maybe the night before, I'm scrolling through my phone, and I go to my wife, "Look, Emery, there's this intoxicated buffoon going to jump on a mechanical bull, and and it looks like Gord Stellick." And she goes, "Wow, he really does look like Gord. That's so strange, and you've got him on this week." And then I found out it was really you.
It was really me, yeah. Yeah, you got that
Okay, so, please explain.
Okay, and I was not inebriated at the time, whatever. I'm like, as a 60-something guy, you know, you got to try things. So my wife, Lisa.
Yes.
There was a curling fun Bonsfield, the cricket club,
which
you remember of. And after, great social section, by the way, curling, a lot of fun. So we had the dinner, all that, after there's a band and everything, and she got the idea to rent a mechanical bull. So it's not at a bar somewhere. So it was a lot of effort and money, get the mechanical bull up there at the cricket club. So after dinner and that, it's there. Everyone, it's kind of like a buffet line, you know? Nobody wants to go first. That's why I go first. So I thought, I gotta help Lisa out here. I wrote it a second time as well with the same kind of result.
Way better.
So my buddy Chris Tehan was videoing it. And to his credit, he said, "Well, I'm not going to share it unless you give my permission. So I look like I'm climbing on a surfboard, and then I get up and I fall, okay? So I wanted to get it going, and it did get people. It was a big success. I hardly recommend it. But I get up there. First of all, Kippy and Sammy, there's technique. I didn't know any technique. I should have leaned back a bit. So I'm up there. I'm exhausted from the climb, okay? I'm exhausted. It's not exactly like a cat burglar getting on. And then I'm going, wait. And then I go. And I go thud. And it's like a bouncy castle around there. So at least it's not a hard floor.
Tomorrow we're going to find the video. For our watchers.
Have you ever tried to ride with those things?
No, I have never tried one.
Me neither.
So some people got up like 40 seconds, 50 seconds.
No.
Yeah, but...
And your back's okay? Everything's okay?
Oh, some people were bruised all over the place, but a lot of people, you know, not quite the 1.5 seconds I did a little bit better. But, I go down with a thud. And fortuitously, Christiane did not tape me going up a second time. I think I would have been huffing. But it was like Mount Everest. I needed a Sherpa to get me up there the second time before I fell again.
What a good husband. 1 second. What a good husband you are.
So, I'm a good husband is right. I'm a good sport. And I said, you know what? Go ahead. I said to the guys at NHL Network, let's put it out. Let's have some fun with it.
So we'll never see you in a Yellowstone episode. That's what you're telling us.
Maybe it was a Yellowstone Park, Jellystone Park or whatever Yogi Bear's at. That's about it. No. Well, I try.
We're glad you're healthy enough to come back and do this the rest of the week with us, Gord.
Yeah.
All right. Our thanks to head coach Craig Berube in the first hour and Jimmy Ralph and, of course, Jason Bukla in studio. If you get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. And we're back again tomorrow on Off the Rails Friday. Doug McClain, he's got a mechanical bull story, I think.
Does he really?
I think
he's
does.
He's got a story about everything. Are they all true?
Have a great night, everybody.